Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 21st. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Joining us, Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Gilderland and Mechanicville, and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. You got a question about your doggy or your kitty? Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. The number is 800-348-2551. Doctors Dallas, Sekuli, and your pooch and your kitty cat. It's all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Here to take your calls, Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Gilderland and Mechanicville, and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Dr. Sekuli is a vet who has been specializing in feline care for a long time now. She focuses on the entire cat's health, addressing behavior and nutrition while providing medical and surgical care. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets using an integrative approach with an emphasis on Chinese medicine. If you have a question, my advice is to call early. It gets crowded. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Susan Sekuli, how are we doing?
We're great, Ray. Other than it being freezing cold out there.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah, tomorrow.
It took me till a block before the station for my hands to warm up, and then
I got out of the car. Exactly.
But it's going to get worse, and then we have big snow coming on Sunday night, or is it Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday
I think so.
Night. Yeah,
okay.
That's no. So you know, you're in a line of work that is a vital service. And hello, Chris.
Hello.
How are you doing as well?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'll pose this to you first.
Yeah.
You're in like broadcasting. You sort of have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you call a sick day when you run a veterinary clinic?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's rough. It's really tough because you know you're going to throw off a lot of people's days.
Yeah.
I mean, my practice is easier because I only have one employee. I have a smaller practice for Dr. Sekuli. That messes up, I'm sure, a whole lot of folks. And maybe you have more cushion because you have other veterinarians who can kind of pick up some of your slack. But I don't get sick very much anymore, though. That's one weird thing.
You know, I was going to knock on wood myself.
Well, how about a snow day? How about a day where it's just terrible?
Oh, we close then.
Yeah.
Or
we
shut down, or the few people come that need to be, that work there, that take care of the cats. But we see mostly the clients close first, right?
Right.
They go, oh, I'm not bringing my cat out.
Yeah.
But
weather.
If you're booked out for a couple of weeks, then it's hard to, you know, squeeze people in and it can get tricky. So.
But yes, the illnesses that the humans have are challenging. I hear it on all different companies too. You know, it's just, it's out there.
This has been an interesting flu season around
that's
here.
That's what I've heard, too.
Does it transfer to the pets?
No. It can.
Yeah?
The flu influenza can.
My cat was sneezing for a while last week.
It can. And actually, when swine influenza came through, I gave it to all three of my cats.
Ah.
Yeah. That was back in, 2000... I think probably 2011.
How'd you get swine flu? Do you work on swine?
No, I don't. It was just the strain that came through.
He so wanted to ask you that.
I
happened to be working on my MPH at the time, so I kind of knew. I was in epidemiology courses and what have you, and so I just was tuned into stuff. Mm. And my daughter and I both got it. It was sicker than I had ever been.
Yikes.
And then all of a sudden, when we were sitting on the couch, I was like, "Oh, look at that! All the cats are sneezing." My cats do not go outside.
Yeah.
They don't really present with signs of herpes, which, you know, as you know, cats can suddenly start sneezing for no reason. And I realized I had given them our virus. Mm-hmm. And so zoonoses, which are diseases that pass between species, we always think of it as, did the people get it? But zoonoses technically are diseases that pass between species, whether it's to humans or from humans to
So you really
our pets.
Can give your pet
you absolutely
a flu or
can.
A cold.
Yeah.
Oh,
influenza
dear.
In particular is a virus that likes to infect multiple species.
The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a pet question for Dr. Sekulli and Dr. Dallas, you're raising your hand.
Yes, please.
Dr. Sekulli.
Can I just clarify, because we're going to get tens of calls now for it, in most cases, is it very self-limiting?
That's right.
In the
oh, for sure.
What do you mean?
Yeah. It was literally
a sneeze,
he was
don't worry.
Very much not sick. Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Thank
okay.
you.
So you don't have to give the cat NyQuil or anything like that.
No, right. Yeah. We were much sicker than our cats. Yeah, for sure.
All right. The number is 800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. Might as well grab a couple of emails before the first break. This is from Jeffrey in Port Ewan. My friend has cats that have itching and scabs. What is it from, and can fish oil help?
Oh, that's a lot of if it depends.
That is a lot, right?
If it depends on a lot of things.
The first thing I rule out, and I've said this many, 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 many times here, itchy cats mean fleas.
Really?
Really.
What about
like
food allergies or
more,
something?
More often than not. So
okay.
Rule that out first. It's so easy to treat. It's so effective, the topicals. And then if they're still scratching in a couple of weeks, then look at other options.
Okay.
I really believe that. It's mm-hmm. just, and people go, oh, they never go outside, so they don't think they get fleas. Well, you could bring a flea in. You're working out in the yard. One flea jumps on you, now in your house. And fleas love cats more than they like people, so they're on them.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yep. We see it often.
And then after fleas, do you go for food next? Because that's the thing we can control, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And the fish oils or some of those are helpful, coconut oil even, but they're not typically enough.
So that the fish oil is topical and you're just going to treat the scabs with it?
No, you're going to give it orally.
Really?
Yeah.
But what does it do?
I find a lot of cats liking the taste of
it. I know.
I find it.
Dogs are easier with that.
Yeah.
They'll usually take it. Yeah. And then what's your third step after the food after doing a food trial, let's say, what do you do next?
Well, but I've also, we've combed through, we make sure we don't see fleas, although then I treat for fleas, and then I look for the lesions specifically, mm-hmm. right? We will do skin scraping, and we will do fungal testing, so you pluck some hairs and or use a toothbrush and send those out, and then treat for the fleas, and then sort of go through.
Yeah.
There are some we go and get right away to biopsy before we go crazy with more diagnostics.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the distribution, too, of where they're itching. Mm-hmm. Like I see flea allergies for sure at the butt area, on the back of the legs, the front of the legs,
mm-hmm.
and then food allergies are more the head.
Yeah.
So
what about things like psoriasis and eczema? Will pets present on that?
No, we don't see those. Yeah.
No, not typically.
Not in animals.
Even a hairless dog,
no.
You won't see that?
they
oh,
get
it's the hairless cats.
Dogs can get autoimmune. Dogs can get autoimmune skin diseases, but it's more like a lupus type. We call them like different types of lupus.
Yeah.
Yeah, not psoriasis, though.
It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sekulli braved the cold to be here in Studio A. Is it warm enough? Susan, you still have your coat on. Are you all right? All right, let's see. One more email here, then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Sandy in Amherst, Mass. writes, my dog had two lipomas. Our vet has determined they're benign. Can you discuss what causes them and what are some of the strategies for preventing and removing them? Mm. And that's from Sandy in Amherst, Mass.
Wow, that's a good question.
That's a great question.
Yeah, lipomas seem to have, I think, multiple components. I think there's definitely a hereditary component. I know humans who have lipomas, and their parents usually had lipomas. I have noticed there to be an inflammatory component to them. So sometimes when, just coincidentally, not even trying to treat the lipomas, when, let's say, dogs have gone from processed food to unprocessed food, I've mm-hmm. noticed that lipomas either have shrunk a bit or have stabilized in their growth, and that was just a sort of a serendipitous finding. It wasn't necessarily a treatment goal. But as far as treating them, there's really not treatment except for removal, and we typically do not go to remove lipomas because even though they're a benign tumor, the removal of them can be quite complex, especially if they're large.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So they take up a lot of space, and surgeons, at least when I was in school, told us pretty much to leave these alone unless they were impeding movement. So these are sometimes ones that are in the armpit, for example, or deep in the groin, and those you want to get out sometimes sooner than later. The problem is when you first see them, they look small, they look benign, and we tend to watch them and go, well, let's monitor, and then it starts to get to a point where we start gnashing our teeth because we're like, oh, should we take it off? Should we take it off? We're not sure. And now it's starting to impede movement. Yep. But ones that are on the trunk and what have you, we typically leave them alone because they create what we call dead space when we remove them. That fills up with serum. It tends to be, we have to put drains in. It's kind of a big deal. It's a big procedure.
Are some species more susceptible to lipomas?
I assume dogs. I mean, I do cat. Are you seeing them?
We
in cats?
Have a few. Yeah. But yeah. No, I mean, cats don't get them very
like
often.
Labrador retrievers, I feel like the, you know, in Chinese medicine, we talk about, you know, damp breeds.
That's what I was going to say.
It's
yeah.
a dampness okay. kind of condition or phlegm, right? Yep. We talk about phlegm. Yep. So,
about phlegm.
We do. In okay. Chinese medicine.
All right.
That's the diagnosis for cancer. I know. I know, right? So certain breeds, too, are more predisposed than others.
So you do think diet may be helpful?
It can be. I don't think it's a huge thing.
Okay.
I think
and
there
no
have
herbs.
Been, I've noticed certain dogs have just serendipitously, theirs seemed to stabilize. And I've also had plenty that for whom it did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Neither of you work on birds, right?
No.
Okay. No. Have either of you had a bird as a pet?
I did. I had a parakeet.
So you get to answer this question from Nick, and then we're going to hit the break. Nick writes, I have come to the conclusion that a bird is the only pet or companion I could have in the apartment. Hmm. What type lives the shortest? What is the average lifespan?
Oh, okay. I can answer this.
So
I did
it's
take a lot of
short-term rental for a bird.
Yeah,
right,
I did
Nick,
take a lot
go.
Of bird courses in vet
He's
school.
A little
so,
low commitment here.
Yes,
he wants
yeah.
the shortest one
yeah.
to try it.
Well, and then these would be the pet store birds. So like the you know the budgies. Maybe I had a parakeet who lived. How long did Ringo live? He lived about 10, 11 years.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know anything. I mean, this was we got him in the late 70s, so there's no information, right? So all I literally fed him was budgie seed. Mm. I mean, now we know to feed fresh foods and, you know, fruits and vegetables and all kinds of things. We know so much more about bird husbandry than we did back then. And he lived a long time. He was a great bird. He flew around my room. He had lots of stimulation. So at the minimum, I would say a 10-year commitment.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the second question from Nick. What are the most docile birds? I still want it to fly around,
yeah.
of course.
I really like cockatiels for like low commitment birds.
Yeah.
Did you let your bird fly around?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He used to fly all around my bedroom. Yeah. He was great.
How
he
would did you land get it back in the cage?
He would just let me pick him up and I would, you know, put him back inside. Cockatiels are really nice, intelligent. I don't know how long they live. They may be 20-year commitments. I'd have to look that up. But intelligent, I would say they're much more intelligent than parakeets. They could do tricks. They can talk or make sounds. And they're small. They're okay. small. And they don't need what like a big bird needs, like a cockatoo.
All right. Final question from Nick, and then we'll go to the break.
Yep.
Can I train a Carolina wren to be an indoor bird?
I have no idea. I really don't know.
Huh.
I mean,
is that a wild bird?
Is that it would be a
sure
wild
is a wild bird.
Then no.
Yeah, I would say
that's not allowed.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
You know what?
That's a good point.
There you go.
I'll tell you one thing. We'll take a break right now. And the other thing that's very clear is that Nick is a very deep thinker. We'll be back. 800-348-2551. It's Pets and Vets with Susan Ciculli and Chris Dallas. Wayne Shorter here on Vox Pop. Hey, listen, the lockbox is open. We need your help. WAMC.org is the website. You can make a secure online pledge right there. Every dollar we raise right now will count on day one of our fund drive, which is February 2nd. That's a Monday morning at 6 a.m., and I'll see you for that, and I'll be grumpy. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, Pets and Vets right now. Dr. Susan Ciculli, Dr. Chris Dallas join us. Roberto is in Del Mar. Hey, Roberto, you're on.
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for calling my call.
You got it.
For taking my call. I have a six-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback male who eats its own poop.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
This habit happened, started to happen about 3 or 4 months ago.
Oh.
Hmm.
And I wonder if there's anything can be done to prevent him from continue doing this. Such a nasty behavior.
Yeah. Mm,
that is a very unpleasant behavior.
And what a way to start the show, the call. So thank you for that. That's great.
What have you tried?
That's okay, buddy.
Well, did you recently, I mean, is there anything else going on, Roberto? Like, did you recently change his diet, or does he has he had any other changes at the same time?
Not really. He eats raw food.
Okay.
And not health changes at all, no.
Okay. Do you give him a multivitamin by any chance?
I do not.
Okay. I would consider, you know, getting a doggy multivitamin. There are some good ones online that are just meant to kind of round out a diet like that, just to make sure he's getting all his nutrients. And, you know, it may be worth a quick visit to the vet just to do some blood work and make sure all systems look okay. And assuming everything is fine, the only way to really break this unpleasant habit is to go out with him as soon as he defecates,
and pick him up.
Pick it up. Yep, exactly. Yep. And that is really the only, there is one product out there, I think it's called Forbid, that you can put in his food, and it is supposed to make his stool taste more ghastly than it probably already tastes.
Yeah.
Have you already tried that?
I have tried that.
It didn't work.
Yes,
and I've also heard people use very hot sauces, like habanero sauces. I don't know if that would work either. I think
dog
it's somewhat
get indigestion?
Cruel. Well, it's supposed to, as soon as they get it in their mouth, it's supposed to deter them. I think that's a little cruel because.
Oh, you sprinkle it on
the
food.
Oh, you don't put it
on
the dog's food.
No, excuse me.
Oh,
I'm
I understand.
Sorry.
Oh, okay.
That was very unclear.
Okay.
You sprinkle it on the poop.
Yeah.
So I just feel even like that is terrible, but.
Do you feel that it could be thyroid related?
I've never heard it associated with thyroid, but I think if you were to do a full blood panel, you know, you could rule all of that out. So I would do just, you know, full CBC, a complete blood count, the metabolic panel, and thyroid. And that way you just know, like, all the things that we can test, we've looked at. His stools, I assume, when they come out, they're looking normal, right? He just, it hasn't suddenly changed. It's formed and
normal.
Okay. So as long as you've ruled out changes in his metabolic status, then right now all we can do is call it behavioral.
Oh boy.
Okay.
And I'm sorry you're dealing with it. It's unpleasant.
Yeah. Sorry, Roberto. Thanks for the call. And remember, folks, if you want in-depth discussions of animal poop, it's public radio for you. Please make a pledge. 800-348-2551. And you can also email voxpop at WMC.org.
If for no other reason that we're exposing you to this.
This is wonderful. This is the sort of highbrow.
You need a raise, right?
Jim is in Saratoga. Jim, you're on.
Okay. I guess this question is for the ancient artist there.
Oh.
I was wondering if they've done much. We hear a lot about vitamin D levels in humans more and more and how important it is. Have they done any research on dogs? And I was just curious where dogs get their vitamin D.
Interesting.
If not from sunshine in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
How are they getting it?
Yes, great question. They have to get it from their food. They cannot get it from sunshine. And I have actually, and so it's actually complicated because it isn't just a matter of them getting it in their food and everything will be fine. I have recently started testing vitamin D levels in dogs, and I have found most of them to, not most of them, eight, well, yeah, more than half, 70% of them to be low. And I've had to start supplementing them. So there is a part of the vitamin D metabolism that happens in the large intestine and involves the gut flora. And interestingly, I've had dogs of the same breed eating the same diet in the same household and 8 years apart and had the older one with a higher vitamin D level than the younger one. Yeah. So this is not even a matter of age. So it is. You do need actual data before you can decide. But the thing about vitamin D is I would not recommend people just start supplementing it because it is a vitamin that you can overdose. So it's something that needs to be tested. And then what I do is if it's low, I start, my lab gives me a catch-up dose. And then once I've done 3 months, we retest and then we go to a maintenance dose. And I found out my dog was low when I tested her as well. Yeah. So, yes, good question.
Well, when I come in next week, I'll have my dog tested.
Oh.
So you don't recommend just like a teaspoon of cod liver oil daily then?
I just, because it's vitamin D and, you know, I actually just like the data. I like to test it and make sure we have optimal levels. So,
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I'll see you next week.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Now, when you test, is it a blood test or urine test?
Blood test.
Blood test.
Yeah, yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas are here to answer your pet questions. And let's go to Tom in Northampton, Massachusetts. Tom.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to ask you some questions about Fred, who is a very good boy, and he's 13 years old. We've had him forever. And he's kind of... he had dental surgery a couple months ago. He had most of his teeth out because they were rotting and he was, having issues. And he had his teeth out and he lost a bunch of weight. And since then, he's been getting sores on his ears and he's very agitated. He it's hard for him to settle down. He's always like, beating up the other cat. And
it's a cat.
You know, okay. He keeps this up. It's nice. Yes, it's a cat.
That Fred's wasn't cat. Clear at first. We thought but Fred might have been a person. Okay.
No. His last name's Mercury.
Okay. Fred Mercury. All right, fine. Go ahead.
Got it. Huh. So
I'm not sure what the hell. I mean, we've had him to the vet recently, and she gave us drops for the ears, and that kind of worked temporarily, but that doesn't work anymore. And somebody had said something about food allergies, and I was thinking maybe that's something it might be. But, just his level of agitation, it sort of seems like since the surgery, he's been very unsettled. Wow. And he wakes us up at, 2 in the morning to get fed and that kind of thing. And we bought automatic feeders and, he doesn't know that he's supposed to go there. So we still end up getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to feed him.
Wow. And how old is Fred? So again, 13?
What do I do?
Yeah, 13.
I would think
13.
Just check
months.
Blood pressure. There might have been something got thrown off, maybe.
Blood pressure?
The only thing I can think of, Tom, because we're both looking at each other, wondering what that could be, is I'm just wondering if the anesthesia during his procedure, I mean, there are, there's a big swing in blood pressure when cats and dogs and all of us go under anesthesia. And, if he had a big drop in blood pressure, when you said there were scabs on his ears, I was wondering if there wasn't good perfusion, meaning the blood was not in, he didn't have blood flow. That was probably a long procedure if they were extracting all of his teeth. So there was enough time for there not to be blood flow in his ears. So those scabs could be the result of that. These are the tips of his ears. Am I understanding that correctly?
No, it's inside the ears.
Oh, inside the ears.
Sort of almost.
Okay, then that doesn't fit. That doesn't fit. Okay. And then I'm sure I can explain that.
I might go back to the food allergy then.
That's 13. That's strange. Yeah.
But I've seen it occur later.
Later
in life. So you may want to start limiting that. And have they done a cytology on the ears, an ear cytology when they treated for the with the medication?
Ears. An ear cytology?
Yeah, they take a little...
No, cytology, not psychology.
Cytology. They take a little bit of the black debris that you're describing and put it on a slide and then look for whether there's any yeast or bacteria or anything to possibly give a reason for that amount of debris, because that's not normal.
So it would be maybe coincidental here? The teeth extraction?
I know.
A separate issue from the ears?
Yeah.
It seems too linked, right?
I know.
That these happen.
And he's up crying at night,
crying at 2
p.m., which I always think of blood pressure as a number one rule out for that. So it's an odd
You're
presentation.
Stumping us.
Yeah, for sure. It's an
wow.
odd presentation.
Stumping us, Tom.
Yeah. Strange. Huh.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tom, you're going to the vet, right?
Fred there, but not as often as possible.
Right.
He hates that trip. So,
that.
We've been when it's only his ears, we typically send pictures and they'll prescribe these drops. It starts with a T. I forget what it is. But we haven't had the biopsy yet, so maybe that's something.
Okay.
It is hard to put that all together with a post-procedural like reaction.
Right.
That is very hard to tie all. So all I can think of is there are two separate things happening here.
Tom, thanks a lot. It's really tough for you to diagnose anything on the phone.
Yes.
So,
but usually like pattern recognition, when you do this long enough, you usually see the pattern. And usually we try to explain things with one explanation. And I cannot see how there could be one explanation here.
So one question for you. You mentioned that the ear, when you thought the scabs were on the tips of the ear, and you mentioned a blood flow issue.
Yeah.
Why does the blood flow stop when they do an extraction?
It doesn't stop. It's just that there can be, if we don't give enough fluids during anesthesia, blood pressure drops precipitously. And if you're not at least a 60 systolic, kidneys can get damaged. And I was just wondering, did he get cold? Because the first place you're going to shunt blood when your blood pressure drops and you're getting cold is you shunt to your organs. And what suffers are going to be things on the periphery. And I was thinking, I thought the scabs were along the tips of the ears and that they weren't getting, that he just had these like residual from lack of perfusion,
from the procedure,
which is blood flow basically. But if they were inside, then that would definitely, that's a totally different issue. So. And that's why I was thinking the blood pressure at night, he was up howling. And so that's why I was thinking some sort of wacky thing happened with his kidneys, maybe.
Well, I mean, is there a lot of pain after a cat has all these teeth removed?
There is.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
That could be the howling, too?
When was it, though? How long ago was
it? It sounded like that was a while ago.
Yeah, I thought that should all be healed.
I should really take notes. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Deirdre is in Cornwall, Connecticut. Hi, Deirdre.
Hi, how are you?
Good, welcome. Yeah, go ahead.
So I have a delightful cat named Bestie. She's 3 years old and has been healthy all the time. She's not been fixed. She recently had heat. And then after that, she has been throwing up, I'd say, 4 days out of seven and drinking so much water, I have to refill her cup like twice a day at least. So I'm concerned, and I'm wondering if this sounds like anything in particular to you.
I would be a little.
She doesn't throw up every day.
Yeah, I would be a little concerned, just because of the in heat, and now she's acting abnormal. They can get infections of their uterus, and that can be one of the signs or symptoms that we see. So it can get pretty serious.
Oh, okay. So I'll be calling my vet.
Do think you should check that out. Sooner than later.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep. All right. That's kind of where you've given me what I needed to know, and I thank you guys for doing what
you're
you
welcome.
Do.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Let's grab at least one more here before the next break with Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Ciculli. Let's go to West Taconic, and it's Jean's turn. Hello, Jean. You're on.
Hi. I am calling about my 2-year-old dog. She's a mix, and she's just the smartest, most affectionate dog that I've ever had. But she's very high energy, so since I've had her, I've taken her to the dog park to really run around a lot and play. And at first, she was very submissive, but she's gotten more aggressive at the dog park to the point where I'm a little more nervous about taking her there. And I've been Googling about it. They do say that, a dog at 2 years old, female dog, can change her sort of how she presents herself to other dogs. But that's what I was calling about, what your thoughts are about it.
Yeah, that actually sounds
years.
Perfectly normal. That sounds perfectly normal. And it sounds like she may not be a great candidate for the dog park anymore. And just to make you feel better, I had the exact same experience with my dog when I was in vet school. She grew up at the dog park. She was sociable. She loved other dogs. She hit 2 years of age. And it wasn't even that she instigated anything. She just wouldn't back down anymore. And I remember thinking when a dog came and approached her and he tried to, jump on top of her back. And the first time I heard a growl and I was like, yep, we're done here. Mm-hmm. And I put her on a leash and we never went back because I needed her. I mean, dog parks are, that's a long discussion. It's
yes,
too much
it
for
is.
The radio show. And there's a lot of, nuanced conversation that needs to be had about dog parks in general. But my opinion is if there's any kind of reaction, your dog does not belong at a dog park, period. It's that part I can feel very strongly about saying. It's very black and white.
And I could add in, my sister now has a new puppy who's 4 months of age. And oh my gosh, I'm
in
love with
her. Puppy. It is for puppies. It's kind of
is for puppies. Yes. And we have found places to take Jemmy with other dogs. So your goal would be to find one other dog that she likes to give her that attention and that playness, but it's not the dog park anymore. I agree.
Just, you know, dog parks are great for puppies. For a lot of exercise.
She needs a lot of runaround time, for sure.
Yeah, my dog has...
She's high energy.
Yeah, my dog needs to run around, too. She has basically one friend, and it's the play is balanced. I don't have to worry about it, and but I just can't. There's no way I could take her to... This is my current dog now, so...
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Jean.
Yeah.
Thanks for
that one. Good question.
Yeah, Susan, that is a good question.
Are there such things as cat parks? They just sit around very aloof from each other. And they,
very different
they
creatures.
They glare at each other. Yeah.
Judge.
Don't you come on.
Yeah, judge and glare.
Judgment.
It's my perch.
All right, before we take a break here, a couple emails about the black gunk in the year. Winthrop writes in, my canine is treated with Tresiderm, 2 drops each ear every day. And then Grace writes in from Sheffield, I'd say... It's a yeast infection from the antibiotics. It happens to humans. What do you guys think?
Yes, but the question is why.
Right.
We know how to treat it. It's just the question is why would it? Why now? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the antibiotics.
Yeah, I mean, we use antifungals for yeast. You know, usually the darker discharge is indicative of a yeast infection. Yeah. We were just trying to figure out, well, why now?
All right. Fair enough. And why now? It's break time, and I'll let you think about it. 800-348-2551. Oh, the fun we're having today with Susan Ciculli and Chris Dallas. It's Pets and Vets. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Ciculli. It's Pets and Vets today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's dispatch a couple of emails here. Andrea writes, I have owned 2 sets of sibling cats, sisters. They loved each other as kittens, then spent the rest of their lives fighting. My husband and I are planning to adopt a brother and sister, 6 months old, who have been described as snuggle bunnies who adore each other. What are the chances they will continue to get along as they get older? All right, Susan, what do you think of that?
Oh, wow.
Stay with the boys.
I think that's a good plan, a boy and a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess I would say as they get older to give them both attention at the same time.
Because I
do think that they watch our interactions with them. And so if you're treating them both same, then they will treat each other the same.
No kidding.
And it is amazing how they pick up on things.
Never thought about that. So. Now, but have you noticed, though, that male-male pairs seem to be a little more snuggly and inclined?
I don't know.
Really?
I've seen female males. I've even seen females. I really have. So
okay.
I don't know if it's the sexes as much as just the personalities.
Okay.
Of
that
the
must
cats.
Be my just like observation, my observation bias.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. KG writes in, KG is from Lanesboro and writes in, we adopted a street cat from New York City a couple of years ago. Took several months before we could get him acclimated as a house cat before getting him back in a carrier for his first vet visit, where he tested positive for FIV. Within the next 6 months, he developed oral problems, eventually had all his teeth extracted. He's now on a monthly injection of Solensia, which is a couple $100 a month. He's been doing great on the protocol for 2 years now. The advice is to maintain him on this for the rest of his life. We're happy to do that if it keeps him healthy. What do you think? Want me to start again?
Oh, I got that. Wow. They are truly dedicated clients, moms and dads for that. That is a common thing we do see with FIV-positive cats, that they develop these lesions. Most of the times, the extraction of all the teeth improves. There's a small number that it does not. Unfortunately, that's the cat that they now have. There is some newer research out coming that we might be doing one of the studies on it, that there are other medications besides the Solensia. The Solensia was developed more for arthritis, and mm-hmm. serendipitously they sort of went, oh, look, it helps with the teeth too. So have them keep aware that there will be some changes and possibilities. I don't know yet. I can't say the names of them.
Right.
But mm-hmm. it's coming within the next year.
Did you say that just cats will be involved in studies? Is this
maybe.
Common?
Yeah, no, it's not.
Being involved with studies.
Oh, yeah. We do studies, yes.
And so are you privy? You do the study, you administer the experimental whatever.
Yep.
Are you privy to the data after the fact?
Oh,
do you
yeah.
know, hey, how did this work?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yep. They're very clear on it, which is great. Yeah. So newer drugs coming out every day. I love it, and especially in the cat world, because the dogs have been the ones that usually get the newer drugs. So,
and what class of drug is it? Is it like an immunotherapy type of thing?
I
you know,
think
or?
So. Okay. Again, it's one of these they're sort of being a little vague with
oh,
us
okay.
yet.
at this stage. Okay, that's exciting.
It's nice to hear.
Yeah,
yep.
That's great.
All right. Tammy from Troy writes in, and then we'll go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Tammy writes, I'm fostering three cats that are being treated for chronic diarrhea with Royal Canin Selected Protein PD. That's pee and duck food, along with Proviable DC probiotic. While the prescription diet has helped, their poop is orange. What might be causing this color of fecal matter? Otherwise, the cats appear to be healthy. Orange.
Orange. That's maybe bile salts. I don't know.
That's what I was just going to say. Is there something liver related still going on?
Or rapid transit, like it might be an increased transit time in the gut, not time to absorb bile salts again.
So this is not necessarily a good thing, right?
It's not normal.
Yeah.
Correct. Especially the duck is a darker food. So I would have expected the stools to be on the darker side. So something's still maybe going on.
Mm-hmm.
In younger cats, the dietary changes for me sometimes take a long time. So I think I'd give it, at least since it's improving, give it a lot longer than just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, well, you were reading about that, with the cat with the stomatitis, I would potentially try a food change. Also Chinese herbs.
Okay.
Because that's considered a stomach fire. So, and that would be a very, like a year of herbs even, and then trying to push back the Solensia very gradually.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, there are many Chinese herbs.
Yeah.
You know specifically which one you would try?
You would match it to the pattern of the patient. So we treat the patient, not the problem. So you'd have to meet the cat, figure out the whole clinical picture. So if there might be for stomatitis, maybe 10 different formulas, let's say, that would match. And then you'd have to look at your patient and say, well, this cat also has this and has this temperament, and so this would be the herb. And then I would give it for probably 6 months, and then if things were looking good, maybe start pushing that Solensia back by 2 or 3 days, and then maybe a week, and see how far back you could get.
You know, both of you have background in Eastern medicine for pets. I'll ask you both. I'll start with you, Chris. Do you think that the focus on medicines and new drugs is over-exaggerated here in the West?
What do you mean by over-exaggerated?
I mean, is too much of a focus on it and less and too little focus on the Eastern side?
I wish there were more, but I have to say I'm proud of the veterinary field, because Chinese medicine is becoming a standard of care in our field. So many veterinarians are getting trained in acupuncture. Mm-hmm. How many of them go on to take in, you know, herbal medicine? I don't know. But it's rare now to find a veterinarian who's not at least open to this. And more veterinarians know how to at least refer and when to refer. And that is huge to me. Like, that is a breakthrough. I think the human medical field is behind. So now it's hard to research some of this stuff too, though. Right. This is the problem. It's right. much harder to research.
Studies, right.
So it's a leap of faith. Medicine doesn't like to do that. So there is a bit of a quandary there. And that's why we're not doing as much research. You can't do sham acupuncture. They think you can, but you really can't. Because as soon as you start sticking needles in a patient, even if they're the wrong points, you still have a clinical effect. And that's why they can't tell the difference between the treatment group and the control group. So it's complicated. What do you think?
I agree. I do feel most of the veterinarians, we're looking for solutions, right, to sometimes very chronic diseases or very, very difficult ones. So sometimes the medicine that is developed really helps this cat mm-hmm. get, I mean, some of them stop eating because yeah. of it, you know? And so your choice is Solensia or steroids, which steroids and you go Depo-Medrol injections, which are a long-acting steroid injection. That's what we used to do years ago. Well, that just causes diabetes and can cause so many more side effects. So I do think there is, as with all medicine, there's a balance between those two.
There's room for both. And that's why I like to consider myself integrative. I would never call myself just one or the other. Because Western medicine is life-saving. You get an immediate effect. So
the number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas. And let's go to Saugerties. Pam. Hello, Pam. You're on.
Hi. Sorry. I have a cat she's about 13 years old, and there are five cats here. And two of them had started like over-grooming and ripping out their hair. One of them had a little bit at the base of the tail, but he stopped. And we brought both of the cats who were over-grooming to the vet, and they said there's no, you know, maybe it's anxiety. We've used the anxiety collars, you know, with the aromatherapy, whatever that is. And but one of them really looks like a rug. I mean, she's like an old rug. She's one side of her body, she's completely pulled the fur out of her front paws, some on her back paws, some on her hind quarter area. But it's only really on one side. It's only on the right side. So, I mean, they said it wasn't fleas when we brought them to the doctor. They've given her some prednisone to take for a week. And then it's a couple of week treatment for the prednisone. But I was wondering if there's anything else. There's no real scabs. I mean, like she had one scab, but it's just pink skin that she's ripped the fur out of. Mm. Like,
all right. Well, what do you think?
Any thoughts?
I personally, I'd still treat for fleas.
Yeah.
I just would. Yeah. Especially if there's multiple cats in the house.
Yeah.
One of them, and it. We treat many cats that I never find a flea on.
Yeah.
And when they call back and I go, so how the cat doing? It's doing great now. Now, granted, you might need more than just a treatment for a flea for the one that's being really aggressive with her over-grooming. So you've got to give her some relief, and the prednisolone might be the answer for that. But there are great topical flea products. Just do it. Say to your vet, hey, can I treat for fleas just in case? And just see. But I would treat all five of them, please.
All right, Pam. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Paul in Kingston. Paul, you're on.
Hi. I have a cat that's going to be 16 years old this summer. And 2 years ago, he was diagnosed with diabetes. Mm-hmm. And I asked the vet, you know, would he suffer or anything like that? And she said no. And I said, how long does he have? And she said about 6 months. Well, it's been 2 years, and I changed his diet to a grain-free diet, and but he still is, you know the water problems with them, and that they constantly drink and use the litter box, but now he's had some different behaviors where he will not leave me alone, and of course his breath is just horrible, and.
And sometimes at night he starts yowling. So I'm wondering, you know, he's still doing normal cat things, you know, but he's become kind of manic towards food and you know, he's been manic about water for 2 years now, but I just want to know if I'm hanging on too long or.
Do you check his glucose levels or do you know how well regulated he is?
He's not regulated. I decided because of his age not to put him through all that. So he hasn't been regulated at all for 2 years.
Okay, I see.
And except for the grain-free diet. And, you know, of course he's thin, but, you know, wanted to get some insight from you maybe.
Mm. Oh, that's a tough one, although you've lived past what they thought, right? So there you are, 2 years. At some point, those high glucose levels, though, will start causing the symptoms, actually, that you're starting to really see. You know, he still wants to drink a lot, and both his increased appetite are both indicators that those glucose levels are pretty high.
Have you checked him for any other conditions like hyperthyroidism? Has he been checked for other things that could be going on concurrently that would be easier to treat? Just because when you mentioned that he's thin and that he's howling at night, I wonder if there's something layered on top of this that maybe would be easier to treat and might improve his quality of life. Because, you know, the ravenous appetite does go with diabetes, but it also goes with hyperthyroidism as well.
Sure.
Well, no, I haven't had him tested since then. I've just decided to kind of, you know, do the best I can with him. And, you know, he's still up and around. That's what gets me.
Yeah, I know.
He eats normally. He uses the litter box. It's just, you know, he's, you know, I don't know if is there a point where I can wait to that he'll really show me that he needs to, you know.
I know. It is hard. It's hard because if he's still doing well, it's not wrong to say, okay, I don't want to treat the diabetes, but if there's a thyroid thing, maybe I'll treat that because it could be just an, you know, put a cream on his ear and he's treatable. And it's also okay to say, I don't want to treat anything. I do, you know, I'm a palliative care doctor and these are nuanced conversations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is okay to say, no, I don't want to treat. But then it is a question of just, you know, what does his quality of life look like?
Yeah,
and
right.
And based on what you're saying, you know, if he's still doing cat things, you know, he sounds like he's still okay. But you're right. There is something that is forcing him to eat in a way, whether it's the diabetes or if it's, you know, let's say hyperthyroidism. His metabolic condition is almost force feeding him. So you won't be able to use that as feedback. But if he's coming to see you, he's sitting in your lap, if he's purring, I mean, those are at least other indicators of maybe ongoing quality of life. So just take it maybe one week at a time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have been for 2 years. But
yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. It's hard.
All right, Paul, we're going to have to go ahead. Mean, go ahead very quickly.
I was just going to say he still does, you know, crawl up on me all the time. But,
yeah.
You know, I just think he really wants to be around me right now. So I'm just. You know, I don't know if that's a sign of anything, but, you know, so.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well,
it's a tough stage.
Yeah, I think I know what's going on and what you're saying. And,
yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, as long as I'm not making any bad decisions right now, you know, that's
well, you're asking the right questions for sure.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot. Very quickly now here, let's go to Ann in Albany. Hello, Ann.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You
I'm
bet.
Calling because we have a kitten who's about 8 months now, and she is constantly scavenging. So she has a regular feeding schedule. We do some treats every once in a while, and some sort of toys with treats in it. So she has some activity, but she constantly goes into our sink looking for food.
She's one of those.
Yeah. Very diligent about taking that out, but now she's like yesterday she grabbed the sponge from the sink.
Oh wow.
Wow.
Put it
to
work.
It had food particle on it probably.
It maybe, yeah. Wow. I mean I know it's behavioral and I you know, there's another cat who's a bit older, they play.
Are you feeding her as much as she wants to eat?
So I've always been a like 2 or 3 times a day feeding the animals sort of person. I don't leave food out. I know other people do
that's
for
fine.
Cats.
Yep.
We only have about 10 seconds here. So
I don't know if
Yeah, just make sure you're feeding her a lot, because maybe she is just hungry. She is still growing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm maybe boredom, too. I've been trying to pick up activity.
Yeah. Well, Anne, I'm sorry, but we're out of time, Anne, and I apologize for not giving you enough time there. But thank you and good luck. Thanks to Susan Ciculli and Chris Dallas. Thank you both for being on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Now, how long do you have to warm up your car to go home?
Yeah,
that's the question.
That's right.
It's going to be cold. Support comes from Dr. Brian Strickler at Schenectady Eye Associates, offering comprehensive eye care, including modern technology, cataract surgery, SchenectadyEyeSurgery.com. And Saratoga Springs Youth Ballet, working with students to help achieve their potential in a collaborative environment with a focus on ballet curriculum and technique. SaratogaSpringsYouthBallet.org for details. Thanks again to Dr. Susan Ciculli and Dr. Chris Dallas for being here today. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Many apologies if we didn't get to yours. We do Pets and Vets once a month, and we'll be doing it again next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Andrea Leong. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy. Okay, so it'll be about minus, I don't know, it'll be absolute zero tomorrow pretty much. Why not do our first Vox Pop gardening show of 2026? Seems like a plan. We'll see you at 2.